Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook posting stuff that was factually in error, and that's the way that they like to play with Facebook, and were very upset when I played with Facebook the way that I wanted to, which was to correct their mistakes. Part of this is also to follow through with the old adage, sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I'm known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. You can find me under most social media that way. I was born to a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island, which is currently under heavy snows. I currently reside outside of Buffalo, New York, which is perfectly clear skies and a beautiful, bright moon right now. And I'm an unabashed atheist. We got a little bit of a change-up in the lineup tonight, and before we even get started, all of those that are currently dealing with this giant snowy weather pattern, our hearts go out to you, and we hope that you're staying safe out there. If nothing else, keep the power going. So let's get everybody started on the panel tonight. Let's start north of the border from me right now, into Ontario in Canada. Good morning, Heretic Woman.
Good morning. Over here in Ontario, Canada, I started out in the United Church of Canada, which is kind of liberal as far as churches go. But my stupid teenager trick was to join a Calvinist sect, which I really don't recommend because they're not very fun people. But I have now been an atheist for over 26 years, and I try to enlighten folks as far as reason and critical thinking goes, and be a thorn in the side of religious fanatics wherever I find them. And we are also very clear and under a moonlit sky this evening as well.
Ain't it beautiful out there, though?
It's cold, but it's nice. It's minus 10, but it's very pretty.
And for those of you that are kind of wondering, yes, that's real temperature, centigrade.
Yes. Not goofy temperature.
Yes.
As I like to tease photo with, is that goofy temperature?
Moving down to the southwest from there, over into the Midwest of the United States, without a camera at the moment, good evening, Bridget.
Good evening. I am Bridget Fitch. I was born and raised in the South. Grew up in a very fundamentalist household. Was raised Church of Christ. And unfortunately, the snow did get us. I am transplant to the Midwest, and we got, hammered pretty good with the snow right now. It's not snowing, but we will probably get some more in a couple of days. And I got out of religion back in 2003, and it took me a while to get out. I struggled back and forth for a while, and at the risk of sounding cliched, Richard Dawkins got me out.
Good enough there. Moving to the right, south of me into Pittsburgh. Good morning, Joey.
I'm not sure what's so good about it, because I've got at least two and a half feet of that wonderful white stuff just all over the place, and anybody who's driven south of Pittsburgh knows the hills here? Yeah, not a good combination. Hi, everybody. My name's Joe. I was born to an Irish Catholic family in Chicago, Illinois, spent 8 years in the United States military, and I am now living in snowy, snowy Pittsburgh as a designer, atheist, very, very sick individual, and no, I'm not kidding. Pneumonia is a hell of a thing. And yes, I know. Look, I've cut down. That's all I can do.
Moving up to the right, into the belt of all of the snow right now in Maryland. Unrenowned Tech, how are you holding up, man?
Well, we didn't catch the full brunt. We're only about a foot and a half where I'm at. And we're at negative 2 centigrade, so about 20 degrees for the rest of you folks out there. But I am handling myself pretty well because tonight I'm enjoying bacon jerky. Bacon. And unlike my friend here, I was actually blowing up zombies most of the day when my power was on. I grew up in upstate New York. So yes, I understand the combination of mountains and snowy ice. Yeah, that's not a good thing. I grew up in a mixed religious background. Both no, not Fallout 4, Killing Floor 2. Half of my family's Jewish, the other half's Catholic, and I studied a whole bunch of other ones and even tried Christianity for a while. And then I really got around to really, really looking at the religions and studying them, and I realized they're all full of shit. I'm an atheist.
Moving across the water over into England. You made it just in under the wire. Good morning, Chris.
Oh, hi, it's Chris here. I understand I've got a problem with my mic again. But I'm currently based in the northwest of England where I work in tech support, and I will do some tech support on my mic now.
Yeah. That's not a great advertisement.
It's a matter of what you get around to first.
I practice on myself.
We'll leave that for now. Meanwhile, good morning, Joseph. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Joseph. I'm born and raised in London, Ontario, Canada, but living in Paris, France since around 1989. And, yeah, I'm just getting tired of people being brought up, told that they can't or shouldn't think for themselves. And I'm doing everything I can to convince them that they can and they should.
So tonight, that's going to be your crap crew. Welcome to everybody who's watching, of course, live. If you'd like to chime in for us, please, by all means, if you're watching live, take advantage of the question and answer system and let us know what you think and ask some questions or send us some messages. We'd be more than happy to take care of that. If, however, you'd like to go ahead and send us some messages after the fact or, well, you know, alternatively, you can live tweet while we're on at Holy Crap TV. We'll get that. Or if you'd like to send an email, you can send it over to podcast@holycrapthevlogcast.com. For those of you that are kind of wondering about a couple of items, yes, I do keep track of the weather in certain locations. Right now, according to what I've got, Paris right now says it's 6 Celsius.
Yeah.
Across the border from me right now, minus 11. Where I am, it's currently registering at minus 8. And down over there, south of the border, in Brisbane. Lovely Brisbane. Yes, Jake, we're thinking of you. It's a whopping 29 Celsius, and that's not the worst of it. Alice Springs is currently clocking in at 33 Celsius, which is, you don't want to be out in that.
That's not that hot.
Well, I don't know. And by the way, Kitchener, just over the border from me right now, is registering at minus 11, which is between me and Toronto. Reason I pull this out is because this is just across the land bridge in the water, but Yellowknife, where we like to pick on, minus 16 Celsius, which is not that cold for them. It's a freaking heat wave on them.
See, now my temperature gauge says minus 10 in Kitchener, but meh.
Yeah, it's okay.
What's a degree between friends, right?
well, that depends. If you're talking about guys, you know, we're always overinflating the numbers that we're working with, so it's, I don't know.
We just measure from the, ladies, you just got to know, we measure from the anus.
So basically you're talking about Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
See, there's a reason I can get away with this, because there was one time in high school we went on a trip for a band competition and the drum instructor actually went ahead, came over to us, and was looking around, all huffy. Like, the hell is wrong with you, Chris? He comes over and he leaned over to us all, and I swear to God, he actually said to us high schoolers, it said, I can't stand this place. If the world had an enema, the tube would start here. His words, not mine. I've got people who could back me up on this.
I don't think we need it at this point.
No, I don't think we do. Speaking of places where the enema hose should start before we get going with everything, Heretic Woman, what is the current status for Rafe Bedawi?
Unchanged, still in jail.
And do we have any further update on his sister?
Okay so far.
They released her the same day.
Yeah, so she's not been harassed since that I'm aware of.
And the fact that they went ahead and they decided to play fun and games with her, of course, does not sit well with anybody.
No.
So, as a recording of the show, it has now been 3 years, 7 months, 7 days since Raif Badawi was unjustly incarcerated for thought crimes. We are still hoping and waiting for you to get the hell out of Dodge. We can hope.
As we say, they aren't any less barbarians. That's for sure.
That's the truth. So now that we've got all of that out of the way, let's just go ahead and get you guys started. With apologies to Noah, Heath, and Lucinda from The Scathing Atheist, your 5-minute freestyle starts right now. I titled this one Darwin's Handstand. I could have called it a couple of other things, and you probably figure it out. Nuclear vessels, and there's a joke in there for anybody that knows Matthew Ebel. Joey, you may become familiar with the joke a little bit later, but deal with that later. I was thinking about some stuff because I was listening to podcasts as usual, which is my want while I'm out driving for the job that I'm at, which that's a whole other thing for another time. And of course, I end up having stuff roll around in my head, which can get rather uncomfortable when you start coming up with new ideas. And they were talking about natural selection, the theory of natural selection for evolution, and talking about how the overall is to, you know, nature selects what is best suited for survival. And it's a very, 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 very coarse way of describing it. And I got to thinking about something that was mentioned during the show, and I came to realize we've been describing the theory of natural selection completely wrong. And I don't say that lightly, because, I mean, shit, as we know full well, you know, you don't just make blanket statements about one of the most incredibly scientifically tested and proven system without having something to back you up, and I think I've got a little something. We've been describing it as natural selection favors whoever or whatever is pouring water into their glass right at the moment with their microphone live right next to their microphone. Thank you, Joseph. But
coffee.
Coffee, I can appreciate that. Anyway, but we've been describing it as a positive forward piece, meaning that you start from wherever it is that you're starting for, and you move forward, and the best survives, and, you know, that's how it works. That's really not it. Evolution through natural selection is a pruning system. Follow me a second, because there's a piece about this that nobody has been taking into account in their description of this all. Evolution says that the best for an environment survive most. Mm. That's not the way that I'm telling this one now. The natural selection method is, if you can't survive well enough in an environment, you die off. Now there's a very subtle difference between the two ways that we've always been describing it and what I'm talking about, because the way that I'm talking about it, if you are not suited to survive well in an environment, or at least enough to replace who's dying off with new offspring, you're gone. But don't forget, we have an entire species of Homo sapien that have diversity in our genetics that don't make us different from one from another, but make this an incredibly large species. We have differences in hair color, hair styles. We have eye color, eye sizes. We have differences in the way that our pigmentation is. We have all of these different things that don't have anything to do with our suitability for survival, except perhaps for pigment, because, well, that is something that does come up. But what about things like creativity, artistry, thinking about things in an unusual manner, abstract thinking? These are not environmentally happy things. They don't have anything to do with it, but in the grand scheme, these sideways mutations of the species eventually have become things that make us what we are today and have helped evolutionarily. And I'll leave you with the one item to give you consideration for: artistry, creativity. You would not otherwise think that this would be something that would be helpful for the species, but if you consider the idea that artistry and creativity is how you develop language, and then the knowledge of how to store that language for retrieval later, and passing down the information on how to retrieve and extract and store more of this information. Guess what? Banging on rocks in order to convey information over long distances? We do that now, but we're doing it with electronics. It's the same thing, it's just a new way of making it work. Don't think of it as you're good for survival, you're going to continue. Think of it as there are pieces that have to fall by the wayside so that so much more in the spectrum can move forward, because in all of those mutations, you don't know what's going to come of it later. And I'm going to continue to think of it now as the, how was it described? The shrub of life, the bush of life, not the tree. I'm thinking this now as shears, pruning off what isn't going to be good enough. I don't know if this is really going to take well, but I'm going to start thinking about things a little bit differently on this one. Or at the very least, Brain and I are going to have a very long talk over a very tall bottle of wine so I can abuse it. This is episode 99 on the docket, Your Honor. Polysyllabic syllabus. And yes, I actually freaking knew how to pronounce that right the first time. I didn't need to look it up. Although my first inclination of calling it multisyllabic syllabus apparently is grammatically not used. So I'm not an English major, man. I used what was available, and then I looked it up and was like, polysyllabic. Yeah, that's the one that we should be using. So we'll do that. So we're going to go ahead, we're going to talk about those big words, those big scary words that everybody keeps using, and we're going to break them down. We're going to explain what words you can use instead, or better yet, remind people, this is what you really mean, right? Because that's the whole point of language, isn't it? Meantime, Katie, we do see you over there. Thank you very much for watching up. We appreciate it. And we will hopefully we'll hear from some of the rest of you folks that want to chime in at any one point. I'm kind of wondering who had something that they wanted to bring to the table straight away, because I will admit there are some words that I know about that I know full well I am dangerous with because I really don't know well enough.
Oh, we just did our show on Monday on hermeneutics.
Thank you. That's a great one right there, because I was trying to remember what the hell that word was anyway. That's one of them.
Yes, and I was a little fuzzy on that until we dove into it, but it's basically a technique of doing interpretation, generally used in interpretation of scriptures, although it's not limited to that usage. So, but that's the basic, it's the interpretation of a scripture, hermeneutics, or as I said, hymena.
So, in other words, things like reading passages of the Bible and misreading them or mispronouncing them as hitty titties.
Yeah, that too. Yep, hitty titties.
There's a joke in there for somebody, and with any luck, I'll end up with a tweet coming through in a little bit that's yelling and screaming at me and calling me an ass.
Good, yes.
He did it on purpose.
Yes, I did. And you know what? Proud to go ahead.
Oh, and then as part of hermeneutics, there's also exegesis.
Well, wait a minute. What is this now?
Exegesis, which is the origin of a particular word, as opposed to hermeneutics, which is the interpretation of the overall scripture.
Or how to confuse each other.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. What's the art of saying something in a straightforward way?
What? I do not know.
If you need a translator, you've got a problem. You should be a leader.
Yes.
Actually, well, that is part of the problem, is the translations. I mean, think about it. We have British English and American English. There's no denying it.
Canadian English is kind of in between.
You know, and despite what dictionaries say, we have all this slang and everything else, and that's just one language. Mm-hmm. Now you look all over the world, and you see all these different languages, all these different words, and words are great at telling you different things about the people, you know. But we don't have a single common unifying language throughout the entire world that everybody can relate to. So there's always going to be room, even within your own society's predominant language, room for misinterpretation.
I got one for you, though. I got one for you that tells you that you're wrong. Remember, only a Sith deals in absolutes. Mathematics.
Mm. I'm talking spoken. My apologies. I should have. See, look, misinterpretation. I should have said spoken.
I've got a finger for you right now. You know that.
That's not misinterpreting. That's not completing your thought.
And it's just me being a pain in the ass because I saw a cartoon a long time ago about teachers arguing amongst each other, and they're talking about how history isn't a strong science. You can't prove anything completely. Physics isn't a completely understandable science, or whatever the hell it was. Right. And then a mathematician is over there, and it's just like, math is a solid science, and they're just both like, oh yeah.
All right, a tree is a tree, but conveying the message about the tree is where we run into problems.
True enough, And I will admit, it's just me being a little bit of a pissant. I'm sorry.
No, you made a perfect example. It was a perfect example.
Excellent. So the problem running into that is a huge one, and I'm going to get to that in just a couple of seconds, though. This particular term again, the origin of a word? Now, because I'm kind of wondering through on this one, because I thought that was entomology.
Yes, but exegesis is more in terms of, like, the scripture. So, in other words, looking back through, like, the origin. So, if a word, for instance, gay or homosexual, right? There are scriptures that say homosexual in them. But if you take that word homosexual and you examine where did it come from in terms of that scripture, you will find out that there are other translations for the previous word that isn't homosexual, and how bias can influence how one translates a specific word because they want it to mean something based on instead of what it may have originally intended to mean or what the word was actually did mean originally.
So basically, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, like the parable. I think it's Luke. The parable of the slave. Like, if you go back to the original Greek text, it's unequivocal that it's slave, but they've conveniently translated that to servant.
Which a servant can be paid or minimally or whatnot.
Yeah, so that's why they did that.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's a good example.
Yeah, Chris.
So a hermeneutic would be the overall scripture, and exegesis would be focusing on one word or a small phrase.
I'm sorry, that was Matthew 18:21.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think all this looking at the original words and intended meaning is interesting historically. It's probably of limited relevance because people's belief, as far as it is based on actual scripture, which, as we've discussed before, is limited, then they're using their modern interpretations and modern translations.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
So while historically it's interesting to find out that, yeah, these words mean something completely different, it's regarding its relevance to the current belief systems is fairly limited.
Yeah, because, it's all about, religion is all about humans telling other humans what to do, and the Bible is basically, quote-unquote, permission for whoever's holding it to say basically whatever they want. So they're going to interpret it any way they want to anyways. So it's kind of a waste of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the big stick. Distraction
from the central issue, even.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, quite all right. Now, there is one other word that I specifically wanted to make sure that I threw in here, because we hear it from the folks that we think of as the larger names, larger people in the group, and that is epistemology.
Yes.
You did what in your pants?
I did not. Not since third grade. And please, thank you very much for pulling up such a painful memory. Why don't you give me a nice paper cut, pour lemon juice in it while you're at it. We're closed.
I don't use lemon juice. I use apple cider vinegar for that.
Wow.
Ooh. Such a...
Wow.
I go deep.
Could be worse. Could be back team.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, that's true. That. You know what? That's.
Or a Benadine ointment.
Well, actually, it's, yeah.
Yeah, iodine. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back team. Nasty, nasty stuff. You know what? At this point, because I'm just going to call it right now, this moment right now is going to put us at 4 shits. So let's not do that anymore.
Okay, that's cool. So do you want us to look at epistemology?
Sure, right, yeah. Now I'm very, very gun-shy because saying that and the term itself... So, as I've understood it, epistemology is how do you know what you know? How do you come to the knowledge that you've acquired? And am I pretty well correct in boiling it down grossly to that as far as anybody else has known about it?
Yes, I would think so.
I would call it the study of the belief bubble.
Theory of knowledge, the study of what can be classified as knowledge and how it can be arrived at and justified.
Yeah.
And backed up. And
which I see as different from belief, but
usually followed by nihilism.
Yeah, and it's basically that that knowledge for these purposes is counted as being a justified true belief. So it has 3 components. It's something that you believe, it is something that is true, and it's not something that you believe that is true by chance, but it is that you have justification and you can provide a demonstration of why it is true.
So okay. It's not, yes. Technically it's not a belief, but anyways, it's the art of our interpretation of reality, if you want.
Well, see, the thing of it is, we're going to deal with two short words for a couple of seconds, because this is actually kind of important. Belief is one of those tricky words, because there are so many subtleties that can creep into the expectation of the term, and that's one of the things that's a pain all the time, because somebody can... Well, yes, but even without meaning to, it is all too easy to pivot on that word accidentally.
Believe. There's multiple definitions of it.
Yeah.
I mean, as a verb, you actually have to define whether or not you're using it with or without an object. As a noun, it has, just on dictionary.com alone, four different definitions.
Yeah, now see, that's where the problem comes in. Like I said, it's all too easy to accidentally, never mind intentionally, pivot this term through something that you're trying to describe. So, want to make sure that folks... Yeah, go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, I think, well, this is just for me, but I think the proper use of the term belief, if you can change belief for to the best of my knowledge, then you're using it correctly, unless it's something directly concerning faith or religion or something like that. See, and then just a reminder that dictionaries, they record word usage. They don't dictate it. So dictionaries are always changing.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, belief can be used in terms of faith, which is a blind trust in something. But yeah. Belief can also be used for trust that's been tested.
Verified. Yeah.
Exactly. So you can use belief in both ways, except you have, when you have atheist versus theist debates,
they can't use it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's being tossed around, and nobody's truly defining what they're tossing around.
Yeah, but that's purposeful, that confusion, and they hijack that word, so just to make things difficult, because they have no answer.
Well, yeah, it's like if you say, yes, I believe such and such, so, belief, you have faith. It's like, no, did I say it was an unsubstantiated belief? No. But well, they like to glom onto that.
What reasonable expectations. I like that phrase. I like that phrase a lot.
Yeah, it's like when you're assessing a situation, like you can't take absolutely everything in, every detail from a certain situation in. So basically you're just relaying your own assessment of a situation by what I've seen, by what I understand from what I've seen. That's...
Yep. Now, to give credit where credit's due, who's the guy who did the show on the air on Texas television? Did all those debates. You guys know who I'm talking about?
Matt Dillahunty.
Yeah, he's the one who I heard first. He's the first. One of his debates was where the first time I heard that phrase. And after I heard that phrase, I went and I really looked into it. I mean, I understood what he meant by it right away, but what I still looked it up and everything else. Reasonable expectations.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure I gave credit.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was gonna hit straight on that, so you led right into where I was going on this one.
I did something right. Mark it on your calendar.
I will go ahead and do that intentionally. Let me show you how this works. The idea of belief as a trusted... Belief as a reasonable expectation operates. Think about this one. Keep this in mind for later. Joey, let me pull you on this one. When you came over here to your desk, or what passes for it, and you were going to sit down in your chair, did you examine every bolt and screw and nut and make sure that everything was going to support your weight? Or did you just sit down in it because you knew it was going to hold your weight straight away?
I beg your pardon.
I think you should have asked me that question, because I'm the fat one on the show here.
Yes, but Joey's the one that's constantly wanting to be the antisocial one and not talk.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
It's not a matter of not my trying to avoid talking. I'm sick. B,
haven't gotten to sleep much. But anyway, to answer your question, by this point, you know, the chair has stood up to, you know, enough years of usage that I have no pending endangerment to finding my tush suddenly on the ground.
Yep, and that goes for pretty much all of us. We sit down in a chair knowing, and I'm using the scare quotes, heretic woman knows what I just did, that we do not look at every chair that we go to sit down in and think, I need to make sure that this is actually going to stay together in one piece. We sit down because...
Well, you guys might not have to.
Virtually sure. Every chair that we sit in is going to stay together, with the one exception typically that we will examine chairs a little bit more closely on two specific reasons. One, if we had one fail on us recently.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Because there's also two, April Fool's Day.
Okay.
And that's an interesting thing about human psychology there, Shujin, that you probably sit on thousands of different chairs during your lifetime. The fact that you say one of them fails in no way increases the odds that chairs are going to fail on you in future.
Well, except for April Fool's Day specifically, because
leaving that aside.
Yes.
For non-April Fool's Day or on there. So if you have a chair fail you for the first time, like, you know, after 30 years of sitting on chairs, then you may suddenly start checking chairs, even chairs of different types and models, in the future for a period until you regain confidence in chairs. But the fact that one's failed on you at random doesn't have any impact on the likelihood in the future.
Yeah, Chris, nobody's arguing the statistical probability that another chill is going to fail right after you. It's exactly what you said. Your confidence has been shaken.
Yeah. But it's part of the way that the human brain misunderstands risk and odds there.
Yeah, but that's also kept us alive over all the time that we've been alive.
There's a part of us that every time we're about to sit down in an unfamiliar chair, there's a part of us that checks it out before we sit down, more so than a chair that's familiar to us.
Well, and I tend to check out chairs more so from the perspective of, can I reach to get into the chair?
And see, I check them out because I'm a big guy.
Well, see, especially if I'm at a restaurant or a bar that has, like, those bloody stools that I need a freaking ladder to get into, then I'll look at it and be like, am I even going to bother trying to scale that thing, or do I need to ask for somewhere more accessible?
Just ask for a kitty stool and use that as a stepping stone.
or a beer crate.
Yeah, beer crate might be better.
Yeah, you need more truck with the beer crate.
Yep.
So
trampoline.
Oh no. That could be interesting.
Not with a ceiling fan.
So, no.
Now you see, understand why the term faith, belief, trust, reasonable expectation, they kind of mean the same things, but they really kind of don't. And that's why this kind of stuff is really, really annoying, because, like I said earlier, and I'm using somebody else's expression, I've forgotten who the hell it was now, it's all too easy to accidentally, never mind intentionally, pivot around a conversation's meaning without meaning to.
or specifically it's
like,
meaningful.
Like if I say something about that comes up when I debate evolution a lot, and I get told you have faith that you know that's going to happen, and I'm like, no, I have confidence based on previous evidence. Thank you very much. And so they try to always expropriate faith into everything, and it's like, no, it's different. It, you know, even though you may think that there's no evidence involved, trust me, I have examined evidence before I came to that conclusion.
And that's where it gets to be a big old pain in the butt. That's the whole reason for doing this particular episode. Yep. You know, we can actually sit down and go, okay, I remember they were talking about this, and you're not going to pull me into that quagmire all over again.
Mm-hmm.
With apologies to various police actions over the decades.
Giggity, giggity.
Yeah, Joseph.
Yeah, again, sorry. Yeah, I'm very talkative today. I've never understood that conversation because, I mean, especially about, you know, having faith in other people's, whatever, findings and evolution. I mean, there's something essential that's being missed. I mean, what is the answer to that going to change in today? I mean, is finding out that we share 40% of the genome of a banana, is discovering that going to like turn us all into bananas, or what's that going to change?
Well, first off, if memory serves, the number is actually far higher than that, but be that as it may.
Conservative, yeah.
Hey, yes. It's basically a fallacy on there, mm-hmm. where what they're trying to do is instead of trying to raise their certainty or their belief in their religion or their conspiracy or whatever to something that could be treated as knowledge, they're trying to bring down scientific findings such as evolution to their level, so they can then say my belief in Allah or Yahweh or Krishna or whatever else is just as rational or whatever as your belief in evolution. Because say evolution is just a faith and just a religion as well.
Yeah, but do you see what they're doing there?
That's why I say they're deliberately trying to bring down or view scientific fact as being on the same basis as religious belief, and it's
the case they're trying to present is one where they're trying to say they're trying to demonstrate why evolution is trustworthy. That's what square quotes for people that are listening. Because, you know, it all comes down to, and these sort of discussions, I find that often on the theistic side of things, it's all about trusting people or whatever doctrine they're pushing over actual reality.
Mm.
And that's a common theme because, and going back to epistemology, religious people tend to trust other humans to determine reality for them, whereas people who think for themselves use their own value judgments to determine what's going on around them. And that's where the big confusion over the words belief and things like that, that's where that all comes in, mm-hmm. around that pivotal point, trusting other humans instead of trusting your own judgment of reality.
Okay, before we move past this a second, Chris, what was that fallacy by name again?
Tu quoque means and you. Or,
right.
Yeah.
Tu quoque, I think, is how...
It's like... Maybe off.
It's like everyone else does it, therefore it's true.
And it can be brought into the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah. All right. Now, the reason why I wanted to make sure we got this is I'm thinking about it also, and I'm thinking about it as it's a matter of trying to level the playing field incorrectly by trying to discredit and obfuscate the validity of someone else's argument. I think
the
I'm
validity of the person, not the argument itself, the person.
No, they will. Like, they will also go after the argument itself.
Well, they try to pick apart the argument to discredit the person who forwarded it.
Hold on a second, because I see where you're going with this. Because this kind of thing sounds like it's trying to wedge between the person and their argument by saying that you have an incorrect connection to your argument. You don't have the
Where I run into it a lot is when I'm debating Muslims and the whole Muhammad Aisha thing comes up.
Oh,
and it's one of their favorite things to start listing, well, you know, this king and so-and-so had a child bride, and this prince here had a child bride, and, you know, this culture over here had child brides, blah, blah, blah. And so they're basically saying, well, it's not a bad thing because everyone else was doing it, and Christians did it, and Jews did it, and blah, 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 so therefore it's okay. And I have to come back and say, no, that's a logical fallacy. Just because a lot of other idiots were doing it around the same time doesn't mean that that's acceptable.
Appeal to popularity.
That just because your average lifespan might have been 30 years, so you're getting married 50% into your lifespan, doesn't mean that, you know, it's still the time frame still applies when you're living to 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 years anymore.
Well, and that still doesn't make a nine-year-old acceptable.
That's a separate issue.
In
this case. And also, like, the fact that, okay, so say king whatever or of wherever married child brides. The thing is, we're not holding up king whatever as a moral paragon and the most perfect human being
ever.
With perfect moral understanding ever. So there's a difference there.
Also, we don't have a lot of kingdoms anymore.
And hopefully we'll have less because they tend to not be.
Now great. We sign treaties and we sign them with pens and paper instead of arranged marriages. We have moved forward to some degree. If for the most part.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, we're perfect. Everyone else is perfectly happy to admit that throughout history, humans have done some very shitty things. And generally, we've learned better since then.
And the way they're approaching it is, well, Muhammad wasn't bad because all these other cultures were doing it and all these other kings, blah, blah, blah. And like you say, but we're not holding up all these other cultures, like, because they'll be the first ones to say that, but that was an infidel culture. So, you know, they're a good example when they want them to be. But if you were to try to use that other culture as an example for something else, well, then they were infidels. It boils back to cherry picking again.
The other major difference is that while we admit that King John of whatever may have done something horrible like marrying a 9 or 10 year old, a 500 or 1,000 years ago, we're not using that as a point to advocate doing the same thing today.
Exactly. Now, and to their credit, most of the times that I get into this, they're not trying to say that it's acceptable to do now. They're generally trying to excuse what Muhammad supposedly did. So that's the difference. They're not, I do want to clarify that they're not running around going, ooh, pedophilia is great, but they're trying to say that Muhammad wasn't a pedophile because it was common and blah, 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 blah. So that's where that goes in. Yay, Shujin's back.
Priests who would beg to differ.
Yes, there are indeed, and it always laughs. I laugh because invariably some person brings that up in the discussion. I'm like, I'm not going to dispute that. you think I favor that? No. But Shujin's back. Yay.
Yes. My apologies to everybody. I do not know what happened. Basically, my entire browser system completely crashed itself out, and then suddenly it was like, do you guys not hear me? Because I don't hear any of you, and then suddenly the whole thing just went, no, sorry, you got a network connection. Fix that, would you? great, thanks.
We kept the show warm for you.
Yes, we kind of rounded out to Kwokwe there.
I appreciate that.
No problem.
So I'll have fun listening to the episode and try to figure out what the hell I missed. So that's going to be...
We're talking about how just because somebody did it in the past doesn't make it right to do it now.
That's true.
Yes.
That's the too long, didn't read version.
Yes.
That's another thing I don't understand is that it's funny because when it comes down to Bible discussion or talking about a particular person, on the theist side of thing, it's always if they can find one positive thing that validates the whole person, or if they can find one true thing in the Bible, then it validates the whole thing.
Everything.
No, there's an easy way to prove that does not work. Here's the thing about pedophiles. You got to appreciate the fact that they go slow in school zones.
Oh.
Okay, I'm sorry. You can't use that as a reason to validate pedophilia. So, see, it doesn't work.
Well, and I keep saying, you know, when they say, well, such and such in the Bible was verified, therefore it's all true. I'm like, you've not read any historical fiction, have you? Because I can cite you a whole pile of it that, you know, yeah, there's real people in it and everything else is completely fake.
Yeah. I quite like reading alternative history, but I think one of the... our best ones on this point is one Matt Dillahunty's used before, is if I make 10 statements and 9 of them are true, then that has no bearing on whether or not the 10th statement I say is true or not.
Right. Yeah.
The statement's got to be taken on itself, and also and with something like a story in the Bible or a character in the Bible or other scripture, you have to look at the whole thing and not just be and just pick out the bits you like, which they do with virtually all film and kids' versions of the Bible stories. They mysteriously seem to chop out bits,
the
like
naughty bits.
The naughty bits, yeah.
Yeah. It's like they're never going to teach Ezekiel 23:20 in Sunday school. It's just not gonna happen.
That's sex ed. Hey. What are you talking about?
At least Quentin Tarantino was kind enough to make sure that I never forget Ezekiel 25:17.
This is true.
And
but this is, you know, this thing about 9 true things and the 10th untrue, this really underlines 1,000 times what the difference between believers and people who think for themselves. Because for me, it comes down to surviving by your own means. I don't know how to put that, but I mean, it's basically, it's about human survival, how to survive in your environment. And there are humans who depend on other humans to do that. And there are humans who have taken the responsibility of doing that for themselves. And I mean, that's the real difference between atheists and believers of any religion, actually. And it's all about depending on another human to make your survival decisions for you. And I say survival, Because at the root, it's that. I know that they kind of dissect and distract by using, you know, religious terminology and whatever, but essentially it comes down to that.
Yeah, and sometimes it depressingly is literally about survival. On there, where it comes to the number of like horrific cases where we see of parents allowing their children to suffer and or die for lack of medical treatment because of their belief systems. We see people relying on the most ridiculous quack alternative medicines and plans on there and dying in a lot of pain. Because they've left their cancer untreated or something for 5 years.
Like someone who can see, who can make value judgments for themselves, they can just look at the kid and say, he's sick, we got to do something, you know? But I'm really, okay, probably going to get some nasty emails about this, but I'm really convinced, and going back to my own believer state, because I was pretty far into it at a younger age, but they just have no ability. Of course, there's an entire spectrum of this, but it's not just black and white. But I mean, believers have no ability to separate fact from fiction, truth from false, good from bad. There's just no ability to assess an environment or make value judgments, because morals is basically, it's a subset of knowing how to survive, knowing how to adapt to an environment, knowing, assessing an environment and knowing what to do in it.
Okay.
And they just don't have that sense.
Yeah, where are you going with this? At this point, I don't think this is really going to be where we want to get to at this point, but
I hope do it me a favor. Sense.
You know, jot that down for me. So that I can refer to that for a little bit later, because I want to that's an area I would love to go into for a full on topic another time, but for right now I want to kind of shelve that for the time being. Although it's good points. Don't get me wrong. This piece is I want to take you on with that one, but that's for later. Katie's given us a question. I want to read it off, and I want to throw it over to you guys, because I'm having a little bit of a hard time trying to parse it myself and try to figure out where I even want to answer it off. So, from Katie, quote, "A lot of it is simply learning better over time. I used to think things were okay as that was what I had learned, but with time and maturity, I realized my thoughts and actions had negative impact on others." Now, I think that's pretty well the description of, well, growing up. And I don't say that in a bad way, because, I mean, that's what happens. You with any luck, you keep learning as you get older. Sometimes it's okay to grow up sooner. Sometimes it's okay to wait. It depends as to what it is that you're dealing with. For instance, learning about fire, James Hetfield would probably tell you learning that fire bad is probably a better thing to learn earlier in life than later. And I do believe that I may have just broken Joey just a little bit with that reference, maybe.
Fire bad.
Yes, some people know the reference, and that's okay. Congratulations. Dude,
the flash when it was actually glorious.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'll hunt down that particular video. Somebody remind me so that I can hunt down that video a little bit later and put it in the show notes for everybody. Because fire bad. You're welcome. Those of you that actually remember that from the first time you saw it, congratulations. How's that boat anchor Macintosh doing for you these days? Great. Thanks. Appreciate it. Anyway, the learning better over time, that's kind of what we all strive for, I think, with this particular type of environment, this particular type of show. I mean, the idea of setting it up so that we can pool our perspectives together in one place. I mean, shit, you can't. God damn it. Jake, now I know what you go through.
Every decision we make, like everything we say even, is based on everything we've done so far or until then in life. And I mean, we can only go on the options we have. So, you know, our communication is about exchanging options, adding new ones.
And everybody can only do just so much in any one lifetime. That's why I wanted to have this kind of situation. We've got, at any one point, 8, maybe 9 different lifetimes of perspective to work off of, and that can only end in, well, hopefully end in a good place when all is said and done. I hope. Yeah. Speaking of which, Bridget, are you holding on okay over there? I mean, I know that you got a lot of stuff going on, but I figured I'd just check on you because you hadn't said anything at all yet.
Well, I've just been listening.
Okay, that's fine. No word for you. All right. So, as far as to Katie's question, does anybody want to take it any much differently or more completely from that?
Yeah, I'd second that, and I've had a similar experience that my actions and views I held, say 10, 20 years ago, would have negative impacts on people and negatively impacted my view of people, and a lot of it was just through simple ignorance. On there of how my actions or my thinking would affect people, because it was I hadn't taken the time to look at what other people's situations and life experiences were, and it's very easy to do, particularly as you're young, you're growing up, and you're still trying to figure out your own life, which I'm still trying to do at pushing 40.
Pushing 40, you know what?
I remember pushing 40, I think.
I remember pushing 40. Great. You push the 40 up and you tilt and you drink, and you push the 40 up and you tilt and you drink.
I learned about that as well on there, and that was a bad idea.
You know what? As somebody who's 39, yeah. You know what? Screw you, man.
Okay.
No, I'm not 39. Anyway, going on.
But meeting people like the other panelists on this show, listening to other podcasts on their own perspectives from different people around the world, reading stories and books of other people's experiences has broadened my horizons and in many cases changed. Changed my views entirely. Meeting Callie Wright and having the opportunity to speak to her on the show a couple of times on Facebook has massively transformed my opinions regarding transgender and LGBT issues.
You know what? And funny enough, I can actually put an exclamation point on this whole damn thing of how you mentioned about this, Katie. Lead. In a 20th century, we had lead involved in so many different things in our culture, including, and Joey, you can back me up on this one because you would remember because you've dealt with them, gasoline engines. Now, in your time with the motor pool and such, did you ever have to deal with leaded gasolines for engines and such?
Nope, we do not use it.
And why is that?
We actually use a mixture of petrol known as JP8. But for those who are scratching your heads, they used to add a lead compound to gasoline because it stopped your engine from knocking.
Yep.
Yep.
little did they find out that it literally coded everything.
Everything. And everyone.
In lead particulate. You had it on fresh vegetables and fruits in the grocery store from the truck that they'd been brought in with. Oh, yeah. You had them on kids' baby strollers. You had it on everything. And I forget the guy who it was that, you know, finally called him out on it, but...
Yeah, they destroyed his career and his reputation and everything in the process to try to cover it up. There was a whole documentary on the whole thing. And one of the things that came to light was, oh, look, you know, once the lead was removed from the gasoline, the violence in the cities plummeted.
That finding has also now been called into question. And I'm not saying that removing lead from gasoline was not a great idea. It was, because it was causing all kinds of health problems.
You want to see how fun lead can be? Look at Nero.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we can actually go the rest of the way and remove the gasoline from entirely from engines fairly soon.
Well,
this will be Chris's last appearance on the show before, you know, Big Oil tracks him down, silences him once and for all.
Yeah, if
Yeah, he'll be rich.
Yeah. Yeah, if I change my opinion next week and I've got a much better mic, you'll know that I've been paid off.
It's fair enough.
I can remember, though, getting when I first started driving and having to fill the car, it was, oh, leaded or unleaded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was only because they had started to transition away from the leaded gas at that point that you even had a choice.
Yeah. And with the better engine technology, you know, it was no longer necessary anyway.
Yeah, only one, and you can still find leaded gasoline today, but at least in the U.S., you can only use it in non-road vehicles, usually farm equipment.
Yeah. Yep. Now that's a perfect example of we grow up as a species, and we learn better. Because at the time, and this was actually something that was covered in the most recent version of Cosmos, it was basically killing people and making them a little, what's the word that I'm looking for? Disfigured when they're born and not quite mentally all there.
Yep.
Did they call that Saturnism there?
I'm unfamiliar with this term.
Mm. Yeah, but they call lead poisoning Saturnism here in France. Oh.
Interesting.
I had not heard that.
Yeah. No, on the news they call it lead poisoning down here.
Yeah.
They try to keep it simple so that people can understand they're talking about lead.
In Elizabethan England, it was called makeup.
Like in Flint.
Mercury, too, you know, for that nice pale...
Yeah. Elizabeth used a white paste that was made with a lot of lead.
In Flint, they call it water.
They do.
Apparently now they do, but that's
I knew we were going to that. I knew it.
We're moving on.
I want to know how that happened.
Somebody forgot to replace the pipes. That's how it happened.
Just to verify, yes. Saturnism, plumbism, painter's colic.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Interesting stuff.
Lots of different names.
Lead paint. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. Okay. So this brings us to a great term that people don't understand well enough, and this kind of actually dovetails back to the belief thing. And Katie, I do see the other piece that you got there. I'm going to get to it, but the scientific process, aka the scientific method, because it gets bandied around that term, and it really isn't well explained. And there are graphics that show how it's, in theory, and I'm not going to go ahead and go into the whole thing, in a perfect system, a desired system, it would operate in a fairly simple structure. It's far more nuanced than that, but whatever. the scientific method. Who wants to play with that one before I go ahead and talk way too much? Because I'm a little wired on the coffee that I got right now, and I can't tell if I'm talking too much yet.
What part of it?
Yeah. Where were you hoping to go? Because I didn't want to go off on too much of a tangent.
Well, basically, what the expectation of quote unquote the scientific method should, sorry, doing the finger wiggle thing, should actually be expected to be. I guess that's probably the best way of describing it.
Basically, my understanding is that I'm not a working scientist.
But we play one on TV.
Yeah. Or on the internet, which is even less credulous. But it's a matter of in observing and investigating an event or a phenomena, something that happens in the universe, and it starts from a basis of methodological naturalism, which is the idea that it will that you're limited to investigating natural causes because there is no one's come up with any way of properly investigating supernatural ones yet. And it is a matter of carefully observing, recording what's going on, trying to isolate the thing that you're interested in, and then have your findings made publicly available to scientific peers and other people, and having the theory tested, reviewed, the results checked and replicated by other people to try and eliminate as much bias, error, uncertainty as possible. And yes, things do still go wrong, which is why we have this, but it's the best method we have for finding out what's reliable and what's not on there, and some of the lengths that have to be gone to eliminate sources of bias and error are extreme. As a skeptic with an interest in alternative medicine, this is a big area because people frequently bring up pieces of research that they claim a scientific support for, say, homeopathy or acupuncture or something. In anything to deal with human beings, as they're massively complicated, is that that you have to try and eliminate any bias, either from like the doctor providing the treatment, from the patient receiving it, from the person recording the results, and you can have to go to some fairly extreme lengths to do that.
Yep. Now the way that I've thought of it, or the way that I vaguely remember it being taught for the scientific method that kind of pulls all that together, is look at a question. Look at something, pose a question as to is this why it works this way, devise a way of testing if you're right, do an experiment to find out does it follow the way that you're expecting it to, find out what the results are of your experimentation, and record it, check it against what you're expecting, and then follow two paths. One is to let other people try and do it and replicate it, or go back and try it all over again because, well, you probably missed something anyway.
You have to look for alternative explanations as to why on there, and designing a test. And so it tests only one specific thing, and the result can only support that one specific idea. Is very difficult.
Now, there are a lot of people that claim to be really, really well-educated, who claim to have doctorates and PhDs and lots of paper on their wall. I'm thinking of one specific personality there, but there's always, you know, the Amish Wolverine. We finally got her back around to getting that in there. We missed the last couple of weeks, sorry. Who think that they've got it all figured out because they've got a journal of some kind. Now, I'm not going to say they've got a book. They have a journal. And the funny part of it is, those people that claim this kind of infallibility, that they have their journal, don't recognize that there are other people, lots of other people, who have lots of journals. Lots and lots and lots of journals that go back, in some cases, hundreds of years. For example, the people that, in the medical community, thought that they had everything settled up with humors. Eventually found out, oh, wait, no, that's not the way that works, is it? Well, there's always the tried and true method of spontaneous generation of life, and oh, wait, that was proven different too, wasn't it? Yeah, that whole maggots thing.
Mm.
But some people know about that one. Some people need to look that up.
Then there's of course the guy, you know, hey, do you mind if I rub this cow pus on your kid?
Oh, wow.
And guess what? That one worked.
Yeah, yes. Weird stuff happens after a while. Yeah, Bridge?
I was just saying, that one did work.
Yep.
It was
cowpox.
Yeah.
Weird stuff. So, okay. So, we've got these pieces, and I want to get to, in short order, I want to get to methodological naturalism in a minute on its own separate piece, momentarily. But Katie had followed up by saying, by the way, well, it's not just growing up, which, you know, to be fair, you're right. It's not just growing up. It's a matter of gaining more experience. Let's assume that, you know, that's I'm reading too far into it. Let me finish reading. Not just growing up. There are grown men and women that think jumping on an unbroke horse and hang on till it quits bucking is the way to break it. I know that's wrong, but I had to learn it from others that had also learned better. This is where I keep using the expression, you were taught wrong. I don't tell people that have a bad belief about something, a bad expectation of trust of something, that they're wrong because they are wrong, that they are wrong, as in they are not good people. I explain, you were taught wrong. The humors idea that I had earlier,
mm-hmm.
That was what was expected because that's what they had thought was the case. It's just that they hadn't been taught all of what there was. They were taught wrong. That doesn't mean that the individual people that were believing something were themselves wrong or invalid. It's just that they didn't have enough information yet.
Come on.
Or it wasn't.
And a lot of these beliefs persisted based on the argument that this is what the great thinkers and people of the past have always taught, and it's the argument from antiquity which rolls up everywhere, that because something was has been thought this way for a long time, then it must be right.
We'd still be living in caves if that had any validity.
Yeah, so and it was represented a move from relying on authority as a source of knowledge to actually testing that knowledge against reality.
And, for yourself.
Yeah, for yourself, or looking at other people's tests of reality and assessing those for yourself. And to make on there that medicine moved on from thinking things like bloodletting and humours and all kinds of other things to where it is today.
Right. Now, the piece about you were taught wrong, I also want to add on to that. Mm. It's not just a matter of that you were taught wrong that I use that. It's a matter of being taught insufficiently.
Mm.
If there is more up-to-date information that appends onto the accepted knowledge, the tried and tested and proven knowledge, that can be a quagmire all unto itself too. I know that's a bramble that has got its own pitfalls to it, but stuff that has been shown to be much more in line with reality, if that has not been disseminated correctly, if it has not been disseminated down after shown that it is much more reliable, then you were taught wrong is where I go with that. That's why I don't... Yes.
Can I add just a bit of perspective?
Sure.
If you consider every bit of knowledge as a survival tool, I think that makes what you're saying quite clear.
Yes.
Yes. Because, that's what we rely on to get by in life. So if somebody's going to give you a bit of advice, is it applicable to reality? If it is, then it's useful to your survival. If it isn't, then, well, they've got something else going on.
Yeah, let me give another example to kind of go along with that. Bloodletting. We know now.
Yep. Oh,
we
know God. Now.
Oh, hold on. I know you've lost a lot of blood in your you've lost an anime a hero amount of blood in your lifetime so far, Joseph. I know.
I was just going to say, come on, who doesn't enjoy a good leeching?
Have legitimate uses of leeching. What we don't have legitimate uses of is cupping.
Hold it. We're going to do a woo thing again later. Don't worry, I'll get to that.
I was just going to say that cupping doesn't do everything that they claim it does. It does have a use, though, because I've actually done it, and it did do something.
Yes, it separated people from their money. The point that I was going to get to was... Don't worry. Here it is. We now know that bloodletting is not a preferred method for curing any kind of disease or condition. However...
In a tight spot, it can do something.
I believe that there is one or two specific things that it might be useful for, but
yes,
it's only those things.
Right. But let me hold on a second, because I want to get bridge on this one for a second. Bloodletting in and of itself is typically not a good method for curing a situation, a disease, a condition. However, letting out blood from someone and otherwise hurting someone's body, I guess is probably a bad way of putting it, but that's all I can think of at the moment. Hurting someone's body through loss of blood, Bridget, maybe you can help me out on this one. If you've injured the body, it wants to heal itself. And if it's injured more, it's going to want to try to heal itself more and faster because it's getting into areas of dire emergency. Am I kind of stating this well enough?
Well, I mean, there is a natural tendency for inflammation and clotting, but I wouldn't do it.
Okay, well, agreed. As we understand medicine now, yes, we would not. But there would be situations where if you did not have the knowledge of medicine and the human anatomy that we have now, if you let people bleed out a bit and weaken their body, the immune system and such, the body will want to try to bring itself back to a level of homeostasis through whatever method possible. That's where I'm going with. Would that be reasonably accurate, or at least reasonable enough for the moment to go with?
I think if you had something like a hematoma, then maybe stick a couple of leeches on there to get some of the blood out, but that's about
I think other than maybe using it to allowing briefly for like for the purposes of maybe cleaning a wound or something, but as a general thing, no. And this is one that we see a lot from the wound merchants, of the idea that you do something to the body and then it will trigger it to heal itself. On there, whether that's adjusting energy, whether it's leeches or drinking some dodgy potion, and these things get applied as a sort of a panacea to cover just about any ailment. But it doesn't actually look at what's causing the problem. And addressing that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of cases, as Bridget mentioned, of there where if you do damage to the body, what you get is inflammation and further problems.
And it's interesting you bring up the leeches thing. We just had dinner with my mother-in-law this evening, and she had been in Europe this... No, not like that, Joseph.
That's the first thing I'll do myself.
Not quite. But she'd been in... No. She'd been in Europe this summer, and she had mentioned... She'd talking about her trip to Europe over dinner, and she actually mentioned that she had seen pharmacies in various places on her trip that were offering these like leech foot baths in the window of the pharmacy. And there were people like, I guess there was like a bench and almost like a pedicure. You stick your foot in the basin, but it was full of leeches and you just stick your feet in the basin and let the leeches go to town on your feet. And I was like,
more commonly I've seen it over here with fish.
Yeah.
Okay.
On there, they're meant to eat all the dead skin off your feet.
See, maybe she was being confused then because she didn't know what to call them, and I said, "Was it leeches?" After going through several other possibilities, she, that was it. So maybe she was confused then.
There are far more effective ways of removing dead skin from feet.
I'm thinking, like, why would I want to? Stick my foot in that.
Yeah, there's any number of cheap and simple abrasives available that will do that.
Over here in Maryland,
they have...
The other thing is, the fish don't actually like the taste of dead human skin, so you have to half-starve the poor things before they'll do that.
Well, it depends on the species of fish. I mean, you go ahead, you get yourself some piranha, I'm sure they won't mind.
They
actually have
piranhas may make it more interesting.
Are fish that will willingly eat the dead skin off of human body without touching the living flesh, and come to find out that there is a lake near me that actually has such fish in it. Now, fish have plenty of to eat, but anytime I get sunburn on my legs, if I put my legs in there and I sit motionless, the fish will come up and they will strip all the dead flaky skin off my legs, and it tickles. It really, really tickles. This is not calluses that they're going after, but... And you know, they do it and off they go, and it doesn't hurt.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to say, for myself personally, the only place where I could ever see this being done, as far as I'm concerned, is nope. Go fuck yourself a stand. I am not going anywhere near something like this. I'm sorry. Ain't going to happen.
I have been nibbled by minnows at various points in my life, but as soon as I realize that I'm being nibbled by minnows, I'm pretty much like, get the fuck off me.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to say, those of you that are just listening and not watching, No, it's just my reaction right now. I know exactly what I look like, and yep, it's right where I am. So we need back on track. This is all. God damn, this is gonna be one of those things. Okay, how about? Was there anything else that anybody else wanted to specifically grab? Another term that we wanted to go ahead and get out of the equation.
Nothing off the top of my head.
Oh, I know. Actually, yes. I almost forgot. Fallacy.
Ah, yes.
Specifically, the term fallacy, because it is all too easy for people to just go ahead and claim a fallacy, because there is actually a fallacy that's, there is no fallacy. I'm kind of paraphrasing a little bit, but there is such a thing. So, the term fallacy specifically.
Okay. So, term fallacy, it refers to logic, and if you're making an argument or a statement about something, there's certain rules about statement being consistent and following a certain structure on there. And what you get is you get a number of fallacies, which are common failures of an argument. It doesn't necessarily mean that something's wrong. What it means is that the way you've tried to argue for a point or form a point, there's a problem with. One of the favorite ones is called argumentum ad populum, which is argument from popularity, that because X number of people have believed something that they can't all be wrong, or that, you know, they might, or 10 million people wouldn't believe this if it was wrong. The number of people that believe something has no bearing on whether or not it's right. The facts will stand up on their own whether or not anyone believes them. So again, it doesn't necessarily mean that these 10 million people are all wrong. It just means that this is not a good way of arriving at the truth and what's correct.
It doesn't prove anything other than that number of people claim that they believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or now, do or whatever.
Yeah. Now there's a piece about this particular item where ad populum is a valid piece for argument if you would frame it this way. 10 million people believe this. That doesn't make it true. This is true, therefore 10 million people agree with it, could be made as an argument. Could. No. Wait a minute. If you had a fact that contradicted past belief or past expectation, and it was shown to be more correct, people will shift from one belief structure to another. The best example that I would give with this would be what's typically referred to as a paradigm shift, and that would be the difference between the geocentric and the heliocentric models of our solar system, or our planetary system, as the case may be.
Right.
Now, it was first believed everything revolved around the Earth, and everybody that was under the thumb of the churches believed in that because the Earth was the center of everything. And then, oh shoot, who was it? It wasn't Galileo. Copernicus? Yes. Came along and said, guess what? I got a new model, and this is more accurate. And it started to change after the new information came up. Now, you could say more people believed in something because it was shown to be more accurate. That would be that could be accurate, but it doesn't change whether or not it's a true item until the item is shown to be true itself.
Yeah, on its own merits. And a lot of times people who have been active in a sort of free-thinking, skeptical, atheist circles will use the shorthand for these. And so there's a number of very common ones. And I'd say there is sometimes a tendency perhaps to, that if someone presents a fallacious line of reasoning, to assume that they're wrong. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong, but it means that the way they've stated the argument is bad. So using Xu Jin's argument, saying that, you know, that everyone now believes in a heliocentric model of the solar system, using that to support whether or not that's correct is poor reasoning. It's on there saying that there's been various observations made on there that confirm this, calculations of the orbits of the planets backed by observation and tested thousands or millions of times, that supports the heliocentric model of the solar system, and the number of people that believe it or not has no impact on whether or not it's correct.
Thank you. I'm thinking back on it now, and I get the, like I said before, I think the strength of my coffee is a little bit on the high side because I'm having a hard time even following what I said, and that's not a good sign right now. So if what I said sounded a lot more gobbledygook than normal, I'm sorry. Sorry.
No problem. Happens. I think I got where you're going. But the shorthand of the named fallacies is used a lot, and it's to someone who knows what they mean, it clarifies immediately what the problem with the argument is. On there, to someone who's not familiar with it, on there it doesn't necessarily mean that much. But there's on the internet, there are plenty of sites that give a really good breakdown and examples of the more common problems of argument and reasoning, and they're pretty interesting to read.
Yeah, if memory serves, I believe Cash from Atheists on Air or Professor Stephen had ordered somebody had made like this big poster that had a whole bunch of very, very, very common fallacies.
They both had one.
Okay. Something tells me that, again, somebody remind me. I'll see if I can track down who it was that had them so that if you want to order one for yourself, you can. If memory serves, you can download a PDF version for yourself and keep that handy.
And if you Google it, there are several websites that list them. Now, what I've found is none of them really have a fully robust list. So you, like in the past, because I was doing a logical fallacy segment on Beyond the Trailer Park, and I was finding I was having to pop to multiple sites to sort of get a more comprehensive list of them. So there are resources out there, but you can't just, there isn't a gold standard. You kind of have to pop around and look at them. And some of them have multiple names too, which is kind of irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah, some have got, a lot of them have Latin terms to start off with, mm-hmm. which can be daunting. We understand that. But remember, yeah. if you're speaking English as a primary language, many of these, not all of them, but many of them will make sense after you've heard what the Latin is and then heard what the English translation is, because there are a lot of roots that go back and forth. Could be Greek as well, but again, it's one of those things where you kind of have to learn what they are sometimes.
I had to watch a video before I could pronounce tuquoque properly. I was looking at it going, huh? Quack, 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 quack. So, yeah, that one's a little tricky.
Yeah, there are some of them that are really, really involved and really nuanced. And like I said, I think my favorite thing of it all is there is no fallacy. Where somebody mm-hmm. will say, "Oh, your argument's got is fallacious. It's got an error in it." No, actually, it don't. And you telling me that it does when it doesn't, that's a fallacy in and of itself. It's very meta.
Fair name for really that. Cool.
There is I believe it's the fallacy quickly, which
like there's a lot of people just like you know, and a lot of arguments. I get people saying that they just say something. They just say it's a fallacy or something when it's actually not. Saying something that's true that's not.
Yeah.
They think that the fact that they're saying it's true means that it's true. I mean, it's kind of disturbing, actually.
George said it best.
Do enlighten us.
Here it comes.
Oh, I've said it before, but this isn't a Power 10 show, so I can't.
You can clean it up a little bit. Come on. I have faith in you.
Church it up, as they say.
You know what? Go ahead and type it out so that I can read it. I will clean it up. Try to, at least.
Go ahead, Joey.
You're going on about this whole fallacy thing. You just got to watch out for the bull crap.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm, sweetly. Yeah.
Interestingly,
it doesn't have the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't, but yeah, here we go.
Rational Wiki has a fallacy entry, and down further it says that there is a fallacy in which there's nothing wrong. Like Cohen's law stacks nicely with bemusing confusion. For a start, since the fallacy is itself a fallacy, it cannot be used to label an argument's conclusion as false without committing it in the process. And it says, you have used the fallacy, therefore you are wrong.
Oh, okay. I get, all right.
Fallacy in itself.
No. Hold on. I get it. Just because you said my argument had an error doesn't mean that your position is incorrect in and of itself.
Yes. It's like another example is you've used an ad hominem, therefore you are wrong. You can absolutely use an ad hominem and be completely right. You're just probably a dick.
that's generally, I think, because people misuse the term ad hominem, which is Latin for to the man or against the man. So it's where you're attacking a person instead of the argument or what they're actually saying. And say you're wrong because you're an idiot or something. Well, the person might very well be an idiot on there, but it doesn't necessarily make them wrong.
Yeah, just because you're in handcuffs and you were arrested by the police does not mean that you did it.
No.
Yes. And just for fun, they also have a fallacy.
God damn it.
Yes, it says
divide by zero territory.
It's the improper application of a fallacy. Additionally, a fallacy may be interpreted or may be misrepresented, resulting in a fallacy ad infinitum.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have now entered the black hole of logic.
Yep. Yeah.
It not only is it circular, it has no bottom.
This is true.
Wow. I never knew such a thing existed. And you know what? I could have gone the rest of my life not knowing it. Thank you. Thank you ever so much. My drug-addled brain doesn't know whether it should thank you or kick you in the shin.
You'd have to get down a little low for that, but whatever.
Great. So we got to see about wrapping up at this point. Let's see if anybody's got a particular item that they've learned over the course of being involved with the skeptical movement or free thinking or whatever it is at this point, or even from the show maybe, before we get out of here. And we'll kind of run from there. I don't know who wants to pick up first because, I mean, just dropping it on you guys without giving you a warning about it. You know what?
Tell us about next week.
I will.
That's a great idea.
I will do that. You mean as opposed to like individually getting you guys and putting you on the spot now? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm good with the spot.
We're shifting the burden of...
I think I went somewhere I wasn't supposed to with that one.
Shifting the burden of closing, bacon. Is that it?
Bacon. Bacon. Yeah, I'm going with the bacon.
All right. So you be one with the bacon and go with that. And you angioplasty have a great time with that one. There you go.
Yeah, the right. fallacy, ad infinitum just made my brain explode. So Bridget, I have nothing.
Bridget, you stop right there because if you go any much further, I will mute your ass right away. Don't even do this to me.
Hey, Susan, you're in the area, so buffalo, 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 bluff, buffalo. And folks, this will be the last time you see me on the show.
Do you see the smile that I'm giving you? Does it remind you of the Grinch by any stretch?
Nope.
It should.
He made me feel warm and fuzzy.
It's the next show, we'll just have a special tech corner.
Just as a matter of fact, and that particular corner for tech will be non-existent. Because. And fine, we'll go ahead and we'll do that. And if anybody wants to jump in a couple moments, I'll give you a chance. Bridget has been helping me out for this upcoming, and that's going to be episode 100. Now, a lot of groups will go ahead and do their 100th episode is a special anniversary type thing. I have not wanted to do that ever because we don't work every weekend, every week, every month, because there are a couple of weekends where, you know, stuff's going on. I'm away. Could be Anthrocon, could be Fertile Equinox. I'll be doing those. Plus, next year, I'm 17. I'm expecting to get to ReasonCon because. So, the 100th episode, even though I'm not going to make it exactly a special, kind of making it a special. Like I said, Bridget has been helping me out in a great way for making this one happen. So Bridget, help me out on this one a little bit. Next week, the 100th episode is going to be an almost all-female cast. So help us out here. Who have we got lined up that have committed specifically at this point?
We're having Tracy Harris from the Atheist Experience join us. And Teresa McVeigh. Most people know her from coming out at the American Atheist Convention 3 years ago, as she was a former Methodist preacher who came out of the closet in front of everybody, which was amazing. Beth Presswood and Matt Dillahunty's other half.
And if I remember right, I'm trying to remember. Singer.
Shelly,
thank you. Yeah. Was she still on board?
She's still on board. She's going to sing for us. Yay.
Very cool.
And I'm about to lose my voice.
That's okay. All right. I'm also going to see Heretic Woman. Were you planning on joining us as well, I believe?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and past co-host, Witchy Buddy, is also going to be joining us back as well. This is...
It'd be nice to see her on here again.
Yeah, this is going to be a little bit unusual because I've not had a collection of all-female members on the panel before, especially folks that are almost entirely co-hosts. except for, you know, a couple of exceptions now. So this is going to be a little bit different, very unusual for us. And I'm really hoping that this is going to play out the way that I would like it to. I'm already running stuff through in my head, trying to make sure that I handle things well. This is not going to go badly. I'm not going to let it go badly. And
just remember, if you've probably seen testosterone go flying before, and as guys, it's easy for us to deal with that. But I've been in situations where estrogen has gone flying before, and the only thing I can say is take a page out of Joe's handbook, put on the helmet, duck and cover.
Not the job that I'm going to do. Because
I'm more. Or, Shujin, you could shave and wear a wig.
Well, I'll go ahead and I'll say it. I do still have a couple of Fujin's wigs from when she lost her hair. So I
could
do that.
I'm not going to.
I'm glad you're not doing that.
If I put on a bra and dress, can I be on the show?
Yes. Yes, you can. No,
thanks
not on next week's show.
Thanks for putting that image in my head.
As long as he wears a blouse as well, then okay.
Well, I was thinking a full floral print, you know.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Your
chest with spaghetti straps.
Oh, spaghetti straps, lovely.
Oh, I want to show off my
a muumuu.
Yeah.
No. I am not Homer Simpson.
Muumuus do not have spaghetti straps. Just so you know.
The shoulder straps so you can show off your shoulder fuzz.
Yeah.
And really, nobody needs that.
I'd have to shave.
Okay. All right. To go along with that, by the way, Chris, you wanted to say something real quick?
No. I was just having problems with nasty mental images.
Yes. Over there.
I'll tell you that.
So 100th...
About that.
100th episode, we'll have the ladies of the skeptical, free thought, atheist community, and we're going to talk about what that's like, because as we know full well, the female contingent of this community is far smaller than 50%, which we really, I would think, it shouldn't be. Or more specifically, I don't think that it needs to be there. But why is it like that? And what's going on inside of that community versus why isn't it larger? We're going to kind of talk through a lot of that and try to see from everybody's perspective, from everybody's point of view, from their experiences, why is it like that? Is it changing? Do we see anything growing? Or worse yet, do we have that retarding out?
We're going to see that change as religion declines.
Yes.
I think. That's my opinion.
Yes.
Because tradition, it's tradition.
Okay, yes.
I'll be right back.
All right. But the point of it is we're gonna kind of have the conversation about how this is all playing out and where everybody sees it from what they're doing at this point. Because, you know, everybody's got their own perspective and their point of view and what they see going on around them. It's the whole reason for the way that the show works. But especially in this particular case, a lot of these folks that we're going to have as co-hosts that would not normally have been are very visible. They have a very visible face on the community, and they do a lot more activism than most of us do. So this is going to prove to be a very interesting situation. I'm really looking forward to these conversations. The 101st episode, however, that's, as far as I'm concerned, our party. There is a reason for 101 to be a special one. And I already told the guys off the air last week the reasoning behind that. We're not gonna talk about it because there is a very personal thing. But that's really going to be our opportunity of cutting loose. We're going to have fun. We're going to invite folks to come on air with us every once in a while. If just let us know and we'll talk with that. And the 104th episode is going to be the next big one. That's the actual milestone marker for 2 years worth of shows. And I am going to be having a special contingent on for that one. And at the moment, that is going to be myself, Heretic Woman, Professor Steven, Bill from Barroom Atheist, Bobby from No Religion Required, assuming that we can keep his ass out of the frickin' hospital this time.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anybody else that's supposed to be part of that at this point. I don't think so, but the intention is that with luck, with a lot of luck, we're going to be asking Cash to come on with us, because this show is directly a piece of him. He lit a fire under my ass, almost specifically, a while ago. And that's the reason why we've got the website, we've got the podcast feed, we've got the show with its own accounts, with its own email address, with its own phone number. It's because of a rant that he put out a while ago that basically said, do your thing, because if you can only help one person, wouldn't be worth it? Wouldn't that $200 be worth it to help even one person? Because you're going to be out $200 in the course of, what, 2 years, three, five? Wouldn't you do it? And he deserves the opportunity of realizing what he did for me, how he lit a fire under my ass for the show, and he's directly responsible for Beyond the Trailer Park getting going.
Yep.
For Professor Steven taking over the reins of Atheist on Air. For Bill and Susie getting theirs going. And for Bobby and Ms. Ashley to have theirs going. And like I said, with a lot of luck, we'll get Cash on. But even if he's not, for whatever reason, we're going to basically say thank you. And if he's not there, we're going to roast his ass. So it's in his best interest to get on with us for that, because thank you. Even if you're not there, man, thank you. And screw you too, making me feel all guilty and shit. Damn it, that's five now. I can't say that. Can't say that. That's right. Can't say that. Anyway, before we get out of here, you wanted me to go ahead and talk about all that? Fine. I ate up a lot of time. Does anybody want to hit a term really quickly? Just say, this is the one that I liked, and I liked it, and whatever. I figured just throw it open.
Defenestration.
Wait,
oh, that's
what?
A good one.
That is bodily throwing someone out an open window.
And what is it again?
Bodily throwing someone out an open window.
Yeah, what was the term?
Defenestration.
And at fenêtre, well, Joseph's not here at the moment, but fenêtre, which is French for window, so defenestration, I can see that.
Out the window. And it also comes from the Latin fenestra for window.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chris, you were chiming in. What was it you wanted to say there?
Oh, no, just saying that's one of my favorite words as well.
Yeah. Okay. Tech, you didn't mute yourself, so sure, did you have one that you wanted to mention?
No, I'm good.
Okay. And anybody else? I mean, I know I'm kind of playing loose and fast on this one, so if... And I'll add that to the show notes, by the way. Thanks, Bridge.
I think I kind of covered mine with hermeneutics. Mm. And exegesis. I just think it's such a weird word, hermeneutics.
it's old. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Really quickly then, there is one expression that I learned in the course of doing one of the other shows that I had produced for a while when I was doing the Flashback newscast. Don't worry about it. You don't know anything about it. But I learned something about the Battle of Thermopylae, And I believe that I've got that close enough. My Greek is positively atrocious, but be that as it may. The basis for the movie 300. Now, it's probably overblown just a little bit, like 14 million times overblown, but be that as it may, there was an expression in Old Greek that has been pretty much misappropriated poorly now. Malon labe, come and get him, is a very crude expression that can be translated there. The idea was the 300 were standing up to the armies of Xerxes, and they basically said, do yourself a favor, just quit now, just lay down your weapons, and nothing will happen to you, we'll be nice to you. And the Greeks, basically the Spartans, lowered their lances, lowered their everything, and pointed it straight at him and said, you want my weapon? You come and take it. And it's been misappropriated now. The Spartans is a name that's used for some school mascots and whatnot, and I forget which college university it is now, but they've actually got it stitched in ancient Greek on their jerseys or on helmets and whatnot for various things, which is kind of cool. It's cute. But those people here in my United States of America who are all up in arms, please forgive the pun, have misappropriated it to say, as Charlton Heston had, you can take my gun from my cold, dead hand. Really? You want to go ahead and posture yourself that way? Stop using that, because these days, somebody's just going to go ahead and take you up on that. And that's not going to end any well for anyone. At the risk of blowing whatever might be considered a PG rating, just cut that shit out. As always, thank you very much for sticking it with us, sticking with us. Wow. That's not really good, head. Cut it out. Thank you for being with us tonight. We know full well that we've got a lot of perspectives, and we hope that you found something worthwhile in what we've got to say for tonight. We know full well that we've learned a little something from each other. As always, thank you on the panel, one and all. Joseph, thank you very kindly for your time this morning, and of course, don't make Deborah do your job for you.
Yes, thank you, sir. Yes, Atheist Apocalypse at atheistapocalypse.com. And a new episode coming out soon. Stop it, Tech.
He's okay.
And yeah, that's it. So won't see you next week, but I'll be watching.
Appreciate it. Chris, of course, as always, thank you very kindly for your time this morning. Have a good one.
I will do, and it's been great to be here again.
Appreciate it. Nothing for you at this point to plug, eh?
Yeah, just the one thing to plug, that one of my friends from the Greater Manchester Skeptics Group is in the process of putting together a book of skeptical political cartoons, very interesting stuff, but he's having trouble finding a publisher to take this on, so he's having to self-publish. Details are available from the website at thinkthebook.org. That's the first part is all one word, along with samples of the work and links to the sort of Kickstarter campaign where you can purchase copies if interested.
I'll make sure that's in the show notes, of course. It was in last week, so I'll just copy it over for this week. No problem for you, man.
No problem.
All right. Tech, of course, as always, thank you very kindly. You be safe out there, man.
What do you mean out there? I'm staying inside. That's the smart thing to do. See, in here, I have food. I have entertainment. I have backup supplies should my utilities fail. But most importantly, I don't have any snow in the house.
That's a good thing right there.
Exactly. And because there's no snow in the house, and I have everything I need, I don't need to go outside and worry about the idiots who don't know any better to stay home.
That's a good point.
I actually, I seriously doubt any of my my friends are actually watching this, but I have a particular friend who actually, yesterday, she invited me and my family to stay at her place because she and her son have not only a fireplace, but a generator, a whole bunch of spare space and everything else, and it was so sweet of her. It really was. She invited a whole bunch of us that get together, just in case we didn't have any means that should our electricity go out and things like that. And, if she ever does get around to watching this episode, thank you so much.
Very cool. All right. Joey, how about for you before you go and nod off entirely? Thank you very kindly for your time. You stay safe out there too, man.
I don't plan on going nowhere. I'm sorry, but when the truck's wheels are spinning in one direction, but the truck itself is going in a completely different tangent, yeah.
Especially when it's the snowplow that's doing that. You snicker. You can snicker all you want. I've seen
snowplows off of the ditch, yeah.
Yep, there's that. Bridget, thank you very much for your time this morning. You stay safe out there, too.
I'm staying put, but trust me.
And you have a little something to plug yourself, don't you?
Well, I'm not plugging anything right now tonight, so except for next week. Plug the show next week. What, the blog?
I think that's probably what he's going for.
Come visit my blog at Bridget Pitch. 2112.wordpress.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Swear to God, man, it's like pulling freaking teeth around here sometimes. God. I'm really bad at this. You guys should be standing up.
I was going to say, hello, pot.
Yeah, exactly. No, not in New York yet. Heretic woman, thank you.
Yes.
Morning. All of the things.
So, of course, Monday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, we have Beyond the Trailer Park on my YouTube channel, Beyond the Trailer Park. And this week, I think we're talking American politics. Sounds like it. I know. Well, somebody's got to do it at some point. It's a little more interesting now that, the brainless wonder has resurfaced and started babbling again, but we have that going on, and at the moment I think that's about it. I am heading over to this month's Unbelievable Brunch in Toronto in the morning, so that's going to be fun. Talking with, by the look of the RSVPs, it looks like there'll be some CFI folks there, so that'll be fun, and some of my Bangladeshi friends, so looking forward to that. But so come see us on Beyond the Trailer Park tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. It is tomorrow now because it's 2:15. So Beyond the Trailer Park, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. You can watch all the back episodes if you like, and all that fun stuff. So I think that's about it.
So all that stuff is going to be in the show notes, of course, for you. As always, thank you, listeners and watchers. We appreciate it. We hope that you have yourself a safe week. Like we said at the top of the show, just be careful with all the stuff going on. I would otherwise be quoting from a 80s TV drama, but I don't think that anybody would really get the reference if I were to say, let's be careful out there. Some would, but you're just old, like me. In any case, we'll be looking forward to seeing you guys next week, as you know full well. Going to be a new one, and I'm really looking forward to the next couple of weeks coming up. A lot of fun going on. Meantime, as always, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well, and I'm completely forgetting because I need to plug all this stuff. Shoot, holycrapthevlogcast.com has got all the links that you need. Shut up! One of these days, on my wall, that's got all of the stuff as far as to how I'm supposed to go through this. I don't have a script yet. I have never made a script. I don't want a script. But I'm realizing I need a script because, see this?
I have an idea. Hit me up after the show for the idea.
I don't really think that I want to.
It's a good idea.
You say that now.
And I'll say it again. I said it before, and I will say it again. Yes, I will say it again.
Let the man finish.
My disapproving eyebrow is raised. Shut up. Off of the main webpage, holycrapthevlogcast.com, you'll be able to get all the links that you're going to need. If you'd like to hit us up on the voicemail line, that's 859-HCTV-554. 859-4288-554. No, I don't have it memorized. No, I'm not going to bother. You can get all the stuff that you need from over there. Meantime, we will be seeing you later. Dallin, this is the point where you want to put in the closing track. You take care of yourself. And, of course, to my wife, Matane Fujin, love you and I miss you. Dream of me. Until the next time we get together, everyone, as always, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.